everybody, and welcome to the inaugural edition of the Silver and Black Pride Cast. My name is Levi Damian, and I am here with Tyler Smith, a.k.a. Raider Domus.
And we'll be doing this podcast a couple of times a week for the foreseeable future, so we hope you'll download and join us from now on.
All right, so let's jump right in. First, let's talk about what we saw last week in the game against the Rams, what worked, what didn't. Let's start with the offense. Tyler, what would you say worked?
Well, I think the first drive worked really well. I think there was a good mix of run and pass. I think the Raiders rushed the ball really well with Marshawn Lynch, just kind of ran it down their throats, really. And I think that was in keeping with John Gruden's basic philosophy. You know, you run and you run and you run, and then you pass over their heads. And Jared Cook did a really good job of exploiting the mismatches he had with the linebackers over the middle of the field. And then Marshawn obviously just sort of dragged everybody into the end zone at the end. And I thought that was about where it ended as far as what worked for the Raiders on offense in the game.
Well, technically, that's actually Al Davis's philosophy, the run it and then throw it over their heads. But I could understand that he would maybe have picked that up from him. So, okay, so as far as that's it, that's all you think worked for the Raiders on offense?
I mean, the Rams just kind of shut down everything else that they really tried to do. But that was also mostly on Derek Carr, I thought. And you can get into that more when you go into what didn't work on offense. But I think a lot of things that could have worked on offense just didn't because of a lack of execution.
Yeah, I mean, as far as what didn't work, I mean, you mentioned that first drive was great. It was like surprising, and you think to yourself, well, that's the scripted drive. Let's see what they do after that. And then they couldn't get in the end zone after that, but they did manage to put together a couple of decent drives there. Really, what stalled them in the first half, even though that was the half, you know, that was the good half, right? They were up 13-10 at halftime. What stalled them were the interception in the end zone when he went to Jared Cook one too many times. What he did, I mean, that's a mismatch, but it's a mismatch when he was going over the middle and he was exploiting the linebackers inside there. But once you put him out on the outside, it wasn't as much of a mismatch anymore. But even in that instance, he did have a slight step past John Johnson. If Derek had put the ball a couple feet farther, put a little bit more zip on that pass. If you watched him throw the ball, he didn't completely step into that throw. Had he stepped into that throw, he might have been able to get that ball right into Jared Cook's hands over his shoulder, and you would have had a touchdown instead of an interception. But there isn't the woulda, coulda, shoulda. And then what stalled the last drive was penalties, and which they had a lot of, 11 for 155 yards worth of penalties, 10 of which for 145 all came in the first half. So, of course, then you're like, another woulda, coulda, shoulda. What if they had had a few less penalties? Certainly that those two holding penalties by Kelechi Osemele on that final drive of the first half didn't help matters at all. That's one of his holding penalties is what killed that drive, and Osemele had gotten tossed like a rag doll by Aaron Donald earlier in the game to give up that hit on Derek Carr, and it was just the fact that it was a low hit that it bailed the Raiders out and got, you know, as a, instead of just being a sack, it gave them a first down in 15 yards. But and also, of course, luckily, Carr didn't get hurt on that one. And then, you know, you look at the second half and you really see what didn't work. That's when nothing worked. Yeah, I hear people say that the Raiders stayed in the game until through three quarters. But just because the score was close doesn't mean they stayed in the game. They didn't do anything after, you know, they came out of the half. The Rams made halftime adjustments and they completely controlled the game in the second half, 23-0. They played in the second half. The score was close up until they scored at the end of the third quarter, but they weren't, the Rams were doing everything and the Raiders are doing nothing except for, you know, Derek Carr throwing a couple more interceptions. That one that he threw that really weird one that he threw, his second one, where he just all of a sudden like turned and just lobbed the ball right into the hands of Corey Littleton. That was just one of the most inexplicable, weird interceptions. He tried to explain it and couldn't really do a great job of it himself. And then, of course, the one at the interception at the end was a little bit, you know, they're desperate. You know, it's when it's a desperation. They were in a desperation situation, so you you try to force the ball, and it gets intercepted by that. You know, the game was pretty much done by that point anyway. So, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that didn't work.
I do want to point out here, Levi, one of the things a lot of people have been concerned about going into the game was the play of the offensive tackles. You know, obviously switching Donald Penn over the right side where he hasn't played very much and starting a rookie at left tackle is going to be cause for concern for some people. And they held up really well. Colton Miller had one holding penalty, but he only allowed two hurries in the game. And you can't ask a whole lot more from Colton Miller than what he showed against the Rams. He's obviously going to have a much bigger challenge against the edge rushers from Denver, and the Rams aren't known for their edge rushing, but I thought he held up extremely well given the task at hand. So that's something I think is a bright spot for the Raiders in this game and also something to look forward to in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought it up. I'm glad you remembered it as another thing that worked out pretty well, because I was, as you also mentioned, the Rams, they're pretty strong in most places, but we mentioned the linebackers are a weak point, but they also don't have a lot of edge rushers. They traded away a couple of them, and they don't have Robert Quinn anymore, and so they don't really have a lot in the way of edge rushers. But both Donald Penn and Colton Miller held up pretty well to the pass rush. I mean, because even the lesser pass rushing teams still offer some sort of threat, and they held up better than a lot of people thought they would. And we'll get into whether they can do that in the future, you know, when we cross that bridge. But all right, so let's move on to the defense. I'll ask again, since you're Mr. Bright and Shiny, what worked on the defense?
Well, I in the first half, I thought they defended the run pretty well. I also liked the play of their cornerbacks, Leon Hall in particular, in the slot. I thought he was brilliant. And they weren't giving up a whole lot of big plays. The only big plays the Rams really had in the game were on pass interference penalties. And now Jared Goff has a tendency to overthrow his receivers, and he certainly did that in this game. But the Raiders weren't giving up those chunk plays, those huge 40, 50, 60-yard passes like they have in the past. They were stuck to their guys. Gary and Conley played well. I thought Rashawn Melvin played well, pass interference penalty notwithstanding. The safeties didn't particularly play well, but I thought the play of the linebackers was pretty darn good. Now, the Raiders' defense did have their deficiencies, but given the quality of the Rams, I thought they held up fairly well until the end.
Well, okay, so that was, you listed quite a few things. They and yeah, I will say in the first half there was a lot of good stuff to be seen. They seemed to be holding Gurley in check pretty well in the first half, and they also then the cornerbacks. I think several of them had passes defended, and in most cases it was like a really textbook pass defended where they sniffed out the route and they came up and knocked the ball down. But as far as, you know, I mean, again, you're talking about what didn't work in the second half for most things. But what didn't really work the entire game was the pass rush. There just wasn't any. They had a total of 5 pressures, 2 quarterback hits, 1 sack. It was that Bruce Irvin sack, the strip sack. And that was a big one. Granted, I mean, it was a big strip sack. Even though the Rams recovered it, it backed them up a little bit, and they ended up they ended up missing the field goal as a result. Had that not been backed up a few more yards, you know, they probably would have made it, and then the game would have been, you know, more than likely tied at halftime instead of the Raiders having the lead. But for the most part, there really wasn't any pass rush to speak of. Oddly, Bruce Irvin didn't even play half the snaps. Arden Key split time with Arden Key, and Arden Key, as good as he looked as a pass rusher in training camp, we didn't see a lot of it in the game. And he certainly doesn't offer a lot in the way of run support. He's still got some like on-field discipline, issues to deal with. And that seemed to be expected. He's they brought him in initially. Their intention was to have him be a third down rusher in kind of obvious passing situations. But then, you know, when they traded Khalil Mack, they kind of earned a situation where they have to put as many, they don't have a lot of pass rushers now. And they got to use what they have, take that chance and say, well, he looked really good in training camp. Let's see what he's got. And I'm sure he'll settle down eventually, but he wasn't settling down in this game quite yet. And I mean, you seemed pretty high on the corners. I thought they did good things in the first half, but I think in the second half, Conley and Melvin in particular, Leon Hall looked fantastic. Leon Hall looked great. He played the run really well. He didn't give up, but I think one catch for 10 yards. And as it happens, it was on a play that Arden Key rushed the quarterback and then left his feet. And Jared Goff did like a 3-point shooter type of move where he pump faked and then they kind of sidestepped and you can't really ask the corners to cover for that long. And I think that's kind of like the one caveat I would give as far as if I want to say, like, give the corners a little bit of slack on some of the longer catches they gave up, is the fact that they were out there working by themselves. They had nobody, they had no help from the pass rush, and you kind of need that. So I give them a little bit of slack on that. But see what else? What else didn't work? Reggie Nelson didn't work. And it's so funny. It's so funny today that Paul Gunther was saying that, you guys really like to beat up on Reggie Nelson around here, I've noticed. It's like, he was pretty bad. he didn't play the run well. He didn't play the pass well. He just wasn't good. And, you know, like, and Carl Joseph saw 7 snaps. And Eric Harris, the guy that John Gruden had been raving about all offseason, I saw him play in practice too, and he looked really good. There was reason to be optimistic. He didn't see a single snap on defense. So it just it was all kind of a little bit of a mishmash. And I think for the most part, the defense just got really worn out in the second half, both because of the Rams were doing well on offense and because the Raiders' offense wasn't getting it done.
Yeah, I find if the media and the fans are – beating up on a player, it's usually fairly well-deserved. But I can understand why a coach wants to stick up for a player, especially one that he kept around for a reason, the reason being that he knows the offense. You want to defend guys like that. But, you know, at some point, Reggie Nelson's play just speaks for itself, and he deserves the beatings that he gets. But we need to have somebody else step up at safety, or we're going to be sunk.
Well, I mean, I think you and I will be fine. But as far as the Raiders are concerned, the safety position was always kind of a question mark. I mean, when they say when you have 4 players who could start at 2 positions, that really means you have no one. Yeah, because if you have one player or 2 players that are absolute, like, definite, then you're in a good position. But when you have let's just try out these guys, just rotate them in until we find out if any of them can play the position with any kind of competency. And so that's the situation they're in right now with the safeties. Each have shown, you know, their flashes, but nobody's really stepped up and really grabbed a hold of that safety position. I think we've seen that more of that with the corners. I mean, because Worley was looking good before we kind of knew the suspension was coming, but he was looking good. And Conley and Melvin have looked pretty good. And Leon Hall, he's really surprised me, Leon Hall, because, I mean, I wasn't even sure. I knew that, you know, knowing that he was familiar with Gunther's system, that there was a chance that he could be kept around just for that. But I certainly didn't expect, because, I mean, that's the same reason he kept Reggie Nelson, right? And he played poorly. I certainly didn't expect Leon Hall to be the standout of the group. So early on, we'll see if that continues.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Leon Hall has been above average at best in his career, even when he was a young player. So I wasn't expecting the level of play that I saw from him. It is nice, though, to look at this Raiders team and see the potential that the cornerback group is going to be a strength of the team, when for much of the last decade, we've had stopgap players in there, and it's been an absolute weakness. The safeties are what they are, but you can look at the cornerback group and actually see some promise there, and it's pretty heartening to see that.
Yeah. All right. Well, now that we've, I think we've thoroughly discussed the first game of the season. So why don't we take a little break to pay the bills, and we will be back in just a moment to move on to the next portion. All right. Welcome back. If you're still with us, thank you. Thanks for sticking around. The next part we're going to discuss is really we're going to talk about some of the changes to the team since week one. It's been a revolving door since the first game of the season, with players that have been either cut or gone on injured reserve or whatnot, and players that have been brought in to replace them. I guess we'll start with long snapper. Yeah, Andrew DiPaola. He tore his ACL on the very first punt of the game. Did you happen to catch that when you watched the game?
You know, I did. I heard them talking about him, that he was limping on the side of the field, and I was hoping that it wasn't as big of a deal as it was, but they said he wasn't going to return, and I figured there was something going on there that was more than meets the eye. And honestly, at the end of the game, with him not coming back at all, I wasn't surprised to find that he's torn his ACL. And we saw a few years ago, when the Raiders opened Monday Night Football against the Chargers, we saw John Kondo get hurt, and Travis Gaithel had to replace him at long snapper, and that was an absolute disaster. But Lee Smith stepped up pretty well for us against the Rams the other night, and I was really happy to see that, because that can go really wrong really quickly.
Yeah, I think everyone... anybody who's been watching the Raiders for a few years remembers the Travis Gaithel thing, and it's not really fair to him. It's the coaching staff's fault for not properly preparing him for that moment, or if he wasn't the right guy for the job, finding somebody else. It's unfortunate that his name gets brought up and kind of dragged through the mud. I certainly brought it up as well. So, but you certainly get that kind of like that flashback that you're like, oh no, the long snapper's down, and this is gonna be bad. And that I believe that happened. That might have happened in the season opener as well. It's just weird. It's either the season opener or the second game. I can't remember for sure. But yeah, Lee Smith had just one high snap, and credit to Johnny Townsend for leaping up and grabbing that and pulling it down and getting the punt away like nothing. It's like, I guess if Johnny Townsend deserves a lot of credit for that, that's just, he's got kind of got good ice water in his veins, if you will, because he did not panic in the slightest in that situation. But DiPaolo's gone, and they brought in Trent Sieg. I guess he was with the Ravens in the off season, and so he's gonna come in as he was the first addition. And then there was the news that Martavis Bryant was coming back, and that was a little bit of surprise, because they cut him on the final cut down because he was supposedly going to be suspended, or there was a suspension coming at some point. But it reminded me a lot of Aldon Smith. They signed him just before the start of the season when they got released by the 49ers, and the Raiders brought him in knowing that, you know, there was a possibility that a suspension was coming, but figured, you know, we'll bring him in and we'll have him as long as we have it, and until he gets suspended again, we'll have a little more pass rush. So we'll take what it's worth. And he actually played for 9 games with the Raiders that season before he got a suspension. So if they can get that kind of, they can get a half season out of Martavis Bryant, signing him to what amounts to a non-guaranteed contract, because they did it after week one, then that's a And that could be a pretty good deal. But the what I found weird was the fact that Gruden said that Keon Hatcher, he was asked specifically, is this because Martavis Bryant has a suspension looming? And he said, oh, not really. It's because he's not versatile, and Keon Hatcher beat him out. So Keon Hatcher gets the rush spot. And when Martavis Bryant comes back, who gets cut? Keon Hatcher. So the whole thing was just very strange. He kind of had to tie himself in knots to explain how that
Yeah,
ended
I mean,
up.
and I've heard some fan chatter on the internet saying that the coaches aren't really allowed to speak about impending suspensions, particularly for drugs. So he wasn't really allowed to say a whole lot about why he was actually getting rid of Martavis Bryant. And he kind of had to say what he had to say. So I'm not going to really put that on John Gruden. That's more of a lawyer thing. I'm just kind of glad he's back. I was always excited about seeing him in the Raiders offense, seeing that deep pass element that he brings to the game. And maybe we get to see it. Maybe we don't. We don't know when or if a suspension is coming. It's sort of rumors and conjecture at this point. There hasn't been anything official coming down from the league for certain. So we'll just see what he offers and how long he offers it.
Yeah, it's certainly going to come in handy this weekend. You know, you have a situation where if you want to look at the bright side of things, is just like who else is out there that you can bring in after. And that's another one thing we didn't mention in the previous segment about what didn't work in the opener. What didn't work was the receivers. They had 43 yards of total offense to receivers. And that is just unacceptable. The leading receiver, of course, was Jared Cook, and then Jalen Richard, and then between Jordy Nelson, Seth Roberts, and Amari Cooper, you had 43 yards of offense. That's just wow. And right now, they desperately need a guy like Martavis to spread the field and give them a kind of threat that they just don't have right now.
That's definitely not going to cut it against Denver. Denver has way better linebackers than the Rams do, and they're not going to give up 180 yards to Jared Cook, and they're certainly not going to give up a whole lot of success for dinks and dunks to Jalen Richard, which is what Derek Carr seemed to favor against the Rams.
Well, I mean, it's funny you say that, and we haven't quite gotten to the Broncos conversation yet, but you say they're not going to give up the yards to Jared Cook. I beg to differ, because they gave up 105 yards to Will Dissly, the tight end out of Washington.
How dare you besmirch the name of Will Dissly,
today.
Sir?
And Will Dissly, I'm not besmirching him, but if you could tell me who Will Dissly was before this weekend, I would give you $100. He never once had a 100-yard game in his college career, and he played the defensive line up until a couple of years ago. And the first game against the Broncos, he has 105 yards. So I think there's a fairly good chance that Jared Cook could have a pretty good game against the Broncos for that reason. But that's, I guess we could just mix in the Broncos talk into the talk about the new additions, because the other new additions that to the team were defensive tackles, because a couple of injuries, PJ Hall and Justin Ellis. Justin Ellis, of course, being put on injured reserve, and PJ Hall is probably going to be out. He's going to be out this week and could be a little longer as well with an ankle injury. So they brought in Jonathan Hankins and Clinton McDonald. Hankins was talked about a lot this offseason because a lot of people were kind of surprised it took so long for anyone to sign him. And I really don't know why that would be. I don't know how much do you know about Jonathan Hankins?
Jonathan Hankins is a really big guy, and he has the ability to fill holes, and he also can rush the passer. He was a pretty good pass rushing defensive tackle at Ohio State. And I think he can do it all. I'm not sure how much opportunity he's gotten with the Colts and the Giants. Neither of them have particularly good defensive lines now or back then. And we'll see what he can bring to the Raiders. The Raiders have they had a couple good, rookie defensive tackles who were good at rushing the passer until the injury to PJ Hall. They still have Maurice Hurst, but I think we're going to see quite a bit of Hankins against the Broncos. So we'll see after this week what he brings to the team.
I think it's, Clinton McDonald. I mean, you were talking about bringing pass rush. Well, he's got 19 sacks over his past three full seasons. Yeah, and he brings some pretty good pass rush. He had 5.5 sacks in the, in 2013 with the Seahawks, helped them to the Super Bowl that year. So, I mean, he brings something to the table. I find it a little strange that he was even out there. And, you know, he also brings the fact that he spent the offseason with the Broncos. So the Raiders are about to play, obviously. So, I mean, Paul Gunther kind of suggested that, you know, there's not much benefit to having, being a defensive tackle, what he brings as far as like secrets or concern. He says, if it were like a quarterback, maybe, but since, actually it might've been Greg Olson who said that. I can't really remember. So one of them said that today, but, that's, you know, because he's a defensive tackle, he probably doesn't bring a lot to the table as far as secrets. But I mean, I would think that he's got something. He's got a few things, a few little keys, and you only need a couple to really help you out. So I think that could be a pretty good addition. And, one of the moves was, like I said, Justin Ellis to IR, but the other one was the release of Shalik Calhoun, who had a really good preseason, training camp and preseason, and looked like he was kind of turning it around after, you know, a couple of years there, or he was looking like he wasn't going to last much longer. He'd really come around, and then, you know, as it turns out, after one game, he's gone again. And I think that brings the number of Reggie McKenzie draft picks to be to get the boot this offseason to 18. There are only 9
left.
That
is a big number. And now, about 11 months ago, last October, Shalik Calhoun was waived the first time by the Raiders, and then he was brought back the next day. So who knows how long his absence from the team is actually going to last.
Oh yeah, he was waived last season. He spent some time in the practice squad, and it's very possible that could be in the cards again. I would not be surprised if we hear tomorrow he's back on the team's practice squad. I think that's what they would like to happen if he doesn't get picked up on waivers. But it's kind of interesting. Just like, you know, he finally looks like he's found it. You know, I talked to him and he said that he's got his confidence, and that was kind of been the main difference, the confidence in the scheme and everything like that, that's why he looks so different. And the result was the same, one game, and he's waived, and hoping for to come back on the practice squad. Just kind of crazy how that works. So, I think we covered all the new additions.
Not that I can think of, except for Johnny Holden.
Oh yeah, that's right. Johnny Holden coming back on the practice squad, and now no longer a receiver. He's now listed as a defensive back.
Well, I think that's sort of a cover for he's going to play exclusively special teams from now on. I'm not sure how much of a position change this actually is going to end up being.
Well, I mean, but you have to figure if you're practicing, you're going to practice at a specific position. I think it could be a couple of things. I think it could be a situation. Well, hey, give him a shot. See what he can do. See if he'll surprise us. And suddenly he'll just, we'll realize he has hidden skills as a defensive back that we didn't really, he certainly got the speed for it. A couple of years ago, when he first came in as an undrafted free agent, he lit the place up because of his hands. So, I mean, if he played defensive back, maybe he'd actually get some interceptions that the Raiders can't seem to – Raiders defensive backs can't seem to get. But, yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, you're right. It's a matter of, we have lots of receivers, so let's bring him in as a defensive back just to get him back on the team, just to get him back in the room and practicing with the Raiders, so that if they need to call him up, they can call him up, and they would do that not as a receiver, they would do that as a special team. So I think for the most part, that is correct. All right, so we've talked a little bit about the Broncos. Let's talk some more about that. So let's turn the tables here and tell us why the Raiders.
Well, first of all, it's in Denver, which is basically you're playing football on the moon. It's almost impossible to win in Denver, even when the Broncos aren't very good. It's really, really difficult. One of the most difficult, if not the most difficult, place to play in the NFL. Even though the Broncos haven't done a whole lot on offense in the last couple of years, they still have one of the better defenses in the league. They have one of the better cornerback groups with Roby and Chris Harris. They have some good young safeties. They have a solid linebacker group. And they have a really good pair of edge rushers, which the Rams did not have. And that's not something that Donald Penn and Colt Miller saw last week. And I think Colt Miller especially is going to be a little bit overwhelmed when he gets the full face of Bradley Chubb and or Von Miller or both of them in his grill at the same time. And when he gets people really, really pushing on him that he didn't see last week, I think we're going to see the true test of Colt Miller, whether he can handle that or not. And that's a big question. And the Broncos also get a lot of push up the middle. I think the Raiders can handle that. But the whole thing put together, all three levels of the defense, it's just going to be tough. I'm not sure the Raiders are going to be able to run the ball. And I think that's what their offense is predicated on. It's running, 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 and then setting up the pass. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to do that against the line, the linebackers, especially the secondary. If we think Carr was scared to go deep against the Rams, I mean, wait till he faces that Broncos secondary. He's just going to be freaked out. He's going to see ghosts, the same as he did last week. I think it's just going to go really poorly.
Okay, well, you mentioned the defense. Is there anything on the offense that would cause
for concern? Well, Royce Freeman. I don't see a whole lot in the Broncos running game from Devontae Booker. Philip Lindsay is a good weapon, but he's a rookie. Royce Freeman's a rookie as well, but he's not any ordinary rookie. This guy is a beast. He had his way with Seattle last week. He scored a touchdown. He was hard to bring down. The Raiders have a hard time dealing with guys who are just hard to bring down. They'll bounce off. They'll just keep running. You pound and you pound and you pound. And eventually, in the second half, in the fourth quarter, you're going to break through. The Broncos don't have the best offensive line in the world, but they do know how to run block. And another weapon I think the Broncos have that the Raiders are just not going to be able to deal with is Emmanuel Sanders. This guy, I think, is one of the best players in the AFC. And he doesn't get as much love as he deserves because he plays on the same team as Demaryius Thomas, who's a shell of what he once was. Emmanuel Sanders is the real number one receiver on the Broncos, and I think he's just going to have a field day. I think he's going to split the seam. I think he's going to attack those safeties, and they're not going to be able to handle him. I'm not a big fan of Case Keenum, but I think once or twice in this game, he's going to be able to find Emmanuel Sanders deep, or Emmanuel Sanders is going to take an end around for a touchdown like he did last week. I just don't see the Raiders being able to handle that guy at all.
All right. That sounds that's pretty good information. So, I mean, if I want to try to look at the reasons for optimism, I would say, well, I think it's kind of twofold when you look at it in terms of like you don't want to put too much into the Raiders losing to the Rams, because the Rams are one of, if not arguably, the best team in the NFL. So it depends on who you ask. They're certainly like top three on both sides of the ball. Just the same way you don't want to look too much into the Broncos beating the Seahawks, because the Seahawks are considered probably one of the worst teams in the NFL right now. And against that one of the worst teams in the NFL, Case Keenum had three interceptions. He also threw three touchdowns, but, you know, obviously you're dealing with a lot lesser of a defense than, say, for instance, if you want to compare directly Case Keenum to Derek Carr. Derek Carr throws three interceptions. Case Keenum throws three interceptions, but Case Keenum throws three touchdowns. Derek Carr throws none, but they're dealing with two very different secondaries. I think Earl Thomas is just about all the Seahawks have left, as far as, you know, elite level players in that secondary. And he had an interception. So, I mean, I would say that's where the glimmer of hope comes from when you consider, I mean, quarterback is a position. I mean, it is a big position in football, the biggest position. And Case Keenum is just not necessarily one of those guys that you think, he's gritty and he'll sneak up on a lot of teams, and he has the ability to not lose games on teams that have good defenses, which is why I think he worked so well with the Vikings last year, and why I think he will work fairly well with the Broncos as well. But he's not, you know, got that killer. He's not Jared Goff. he's not not to say that Jared Goff is great, but Jared Goff is a pretty decent quarterback, and he's leading the Rams pretty well, and he looks like he's got a bright future ahead of him. And he's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not going to come back like the Packers did, and he's just going to blow the doors off, even coming out like Willis Reed with one leg. You know, he's not going to do anything like that. He's just going to be a steady hand, and then the Raiders just kind of have to get aggressive, and they have to take advantage of that. As far as where the bright spots for the Raiders offense, I'd say that the possibility that Martavis Bryant, what he could bring, because we saw what the receivers did last week, and it wasn't great against a strong secondary, and they're going to go against a strong secondary again, only this time there's going to be help from the pass rushers, like you said, but they didn't have that deep threat. Now they do. That adds another dimension to their offense that could do well. And one, using Marshawn Lynch only 11 times in the game last week, you hope that they kind of, I don't know, learn from that and say, hey, we need to feed the beast, if you will. John Gruden said in this offseason when he was talking about really early on, he said he talked to Marshawn and he wants him full time. He doesn't want these games with only a few carries and yet, you know, they get in the game and he's like, Marshawn gets a drive. Then Doug Martin gets a drive and Jalen Richard gets a drive. It's like, well, no. You mix them up when you feel like it, you need to mix things up. But for the most part, you stick with your workhorse. You stick with Marshawn Lynch, and you just hope that they realize that when you're going against the Broncos, that might be a pretty good idea. I mean, they do have some pretty good defensive linemen all the way across, but Marshawn can wear them out if they use him enough. And I think that it just seems, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't. But I feel like they have to know that they should, and with that in mind, I could see there being a cause for some optimism in that regard. I don't really have anything else in that subject, and I think our podcast has been. We're at about 38 minutes now, I think. So unless you have anything else to add, I think we're about good.
So I think that should be about the end of the first episode for us.
All right, great. So again, thanks everybody for listening to our maiden voyage of the Silver and Black Pride Cast. Hope we didn't bore you to tears. And if we did, I hope you were just looking for something to put you to sleep. And and in that case, you're welcome.
Hello, you're listening to Simone de Rochefort, one of the hosts of The Polygon Show. It's a show all about the video games that you'll never have time to play, brought to you by four friends who are just as passionate about food, soft drinks, and TV shows as we are about video games. Every Friday, we bring you a new hour of personal stories, like how we found the best way to play Yakuza 0, or even what happens when you play so much Zelda that you hurt your hands and can't play games anymore. Above all, we just have a really good time talking about the games that we love. Check out the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. You can also find us at Polygon Show on Twitter and send a tweet to say hi. Thanks for listening.